Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen, TGIF. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. I have to tell y'all, I have to make a confession. This show is recorded today because I just wanted a little goof-off time during the afternoon today. But the other thing, too, in addition to sharing this show with one of my favorite people, is it's nice to be able to do this show and have a nice, a good cup of hot coffee in the morning, and you know, just it just kind of is soothing. But like I said, the great thing is I get to share this show with my friend Paul V. Shelton of Warwickshire. Yeah, we're talking about the economy. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Gretchen. I am doing fine, and I have a nice cup of coffee with me as well. So I am joining you in that sentiment.
Yes, isn't it nice? You know, I mean, not that you can't have coffee any other time of the day, but in the morning with that first cup of coffee, you know, and I'm a little late with my first cup, but that's okay. And I'm committing a sin. I'm not advising this at all, but I'm having it with a nice homemade brownie.
Yeah.
Not breakfast.
TGIF.
Yes, indeed. So how you doing?
I am doing well. I am doing well. No complaints on this end. Happy to see some positive economic news come out, and I'm sure we'll get to that shortly. The markets are vibrating a little bit, you know, due to the news, the positivity of it, but, you know, we'll decipher all of that. But how's everything on your end?
Everything's well. I'm kind of like my mom could complain, but nobody would listen. But I really don't have any reason, you know, any legitimate reason to complain, especially this week. It's been a good week. But I do want to talk about everything's going up except, and even though the wages have gone up, they're still not keeping up. What's up, Paul?
Yeah, it's we are in inflation central right now. We're seeing inflation in many areas of our economy. We're actually seeing some wage inflation, but it's uneven. In many sectors that we're seeing growth in employment, we're actually seeing some sectors that are having better wage growth than others, and it's creating some uneven pockets of overall wealth in our economy. And, you know, that's leading to, you know, some other, you know, fundamental and issues that we'll have, and that's stretching the wealth gap a little bit more, which we saw some data earlier this week that kind of spoke to that as well. But as we know, that first Friday of every month, my favorite economic indicator is released, and that's the jobs report. And in this most recent jobs report, it gave us a read on economic activity in the month of January, it shows that we've gained 467,000 new jobs in our economy, which was a surprise beat to the market, because there was an expectation that the fight and the height of the Omicron variant wouldn't cause a lot of jobs to dissipate and disappear from the economy. But the opposite was true. And most importantly, and most relevant, I guess I should say, to our local economy, the leisure and hospitality industry increased by 151,000 jobs. And around the nation, but we know that, you know, leisure hospitality is something that is very, very near and dear to our hearts here in Central Florida. And that's the exact opposite of the expectations that everyone, every analyst on Wall Street were you know, prepared for. We were thinking with Omicron that would directly hurt leisure and hospitality, and thus, you know, decreasing the amount of new jobs that were brought into the market. So you have a very good scenario with today's numbers that came out in the jobs report. The unemployment rate is officially down to 3.9%. And on top of, you know, what took place in January, there were upward revisions for the month of December and the month of November. So those two upward revisions in December and November accounted for an additional 709,000 jobs. So our market is hot. That's what the statistics say, that our economy is growing and it's hot, and there is a true reason why this inflation that we're seeing is not transitory, thus leading the Federal Reserve to more than likely start increasing interest rates and be a little bit more aggressive when they do so.
Okay, so I've got to ask you about a couple of observations that I had since we last spoke. One, so I had this ticket. I do play the lottery sometimes, scratch off, and I had this ticket. It wasn't worth that much. It was $10. But when I tried to cash it, they at a store, they said something about it was inactive or whatever, and I think maybe it was an old ticket that expired. So anyway, they talked about going to the lottery office. So I had to run some other errands, and I went by our local or regional lottery office. And there, and I've been there before for other reasons, but there were people, like, the place was full. And there were people lined up outside. So as people left, then they called other people in. And you had to take a number and all this kind of stuff. Well, because I don't remember it being that full the last time I went. And then I'm listening, and I wasn't intentionally listening. I was trying to mind my own business, but I'm listening to conversations, and this guy talks about how, you know, he's trying to get a tax form or something because he went like twice last year, and one of his tickets was like $15,000. And I'm like, dang, that was my part-time job salary last year, maybe. And I'm like, so what, you know, we talk about people not rushing back to work. Are people like sitting around and playing the lottery and getting more money by doing that than going back to work?
I haven't seen anything in reference to that. That's quite interesting, though. I haven't seen any data or heard anyone, fortunately, that has struck a golden, you know, ticket, I should say, from Willy Wonka or anything of that nature. I know, unfortunately, I've never got one of those golden
tickets.
Me
neither.
Win the lottery. But, no, I'm not sure.
So I was just curious about that because I'm thinking if you've got limited income, you know, wouldn't you be doing other things? And you know, everybody's got their own thing that they like to do. But I was just curious because I did not expect it to be that full in a time where people are not necessarily working, and it makes, I'm like wondering where they're getting the money from to go and you know, and then they're. And then winning $15,000, let's say, an amount like that, what does that do when you I guess I want to ask, first of all, what should you do if you're winning money like that in terms of investing or you know, saving for a rainy day? What kind of things should you be doing with winnings like that?
Yeah, definitely. That's a great question. I think the first thing we have to understand is when we win lottery or get those lump sums, of that nature, they're taxed at a capital gains rate of your ordinary income in that year. It's considered term gain. So you're going to be taxed on your ordinary income rate, and oftentimes you may be on the border of being bumped up to that next tax rate based on what those earnings or those winnings may be. So there's different, you know, ways you can approach it. I always say, you know, from an investment standpoint, if you have the ability to be a part of an employer-sponsored plan, such as a 401k a 403B or something like that, always max those out. That gives you current tax deferrals in that respect. You can also, outside of that, invest in a IRA, you know, a traditional IRA to help offset any gains and things of that nature. So those would be, you know, the first two things that I will look at is that tax consequence that you're going to receive from that winning of that extra $15,000 and how to mitigate those taxes so you can keep it and grow it for yourself. So you definitely want to invest it, but don't just invest it in a typical brokerage account because you may incur more taxes or you may put it in a vehicle that's not going to defer taxes. And that $15,000 turns into, you know, a much larger tax bill for you with compounding growth and interest. So it goes by a case-by-case scenario, but you want to be prudent and understand, you know, what the responsibilities are with receiving that money.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a part of you that's tempted, I would think, that's saying, that's not going to happen again. Let me go and have a little fun with it. But at the
Correct.
Same time, with one of the things that this economy of the last 2 years should have taught us is that you've got to kind of make some other plans. You have to have some backup plans because you don't know what's going to happen. So.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't have that crystal ball to forecast, you know, what's going to even happen with our incomes day to day that are very, very steady and very sure. None of us foresaw, you know, the pandemic coming and changes, yeah, and life's taking place. So it's very important, you know, to, you know, from just a financial standing plan point, make sure you have that rainy day fund available. And then make sure you have those savings available on top of that, then your investment. So when we do get into those black swan events like we saw in February of 2020, we're able to sustain and still thrive in respect to that.
So my other observation, and thank you for that advice, Paul, and we'll probably get into that at another time as well because, you know, like we were saying, everything's kind of unpredictable right now. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about, okay, so there was a day this week where the gas prices in 24 hours jumped up 15 cents, at least here in Central Florida. You know, I've seen gas had already jumped up, and it was like $3.35, and it jumped up to $3.49, $3.50. What is going on with that? What is causing that? And I heard, I guess maybe there was some crude oil prices jumping up.
Correct. Yeah. So what we've seen is a significant rise in commodity prices across the board, and this is something that you typically see whenever you have an inflating economy. So to me, this is another confirmation of the inflation that we're seeing in our economy.
Mm-hmm.
Oil prices have risen, you know, to, I believe yesterday they maxed at a high. They crossed over $90 a barrel, and that was the first time they were that 2014. So
it's
been 8 years since we've seen gas prices or at least oil prices in this range. Now, there's a lot of components that go into, the prices that we pay at the tank versus the prices it costs to extract the oil out of the ground, such as local and state taxes and other tariffs and things of that nature. But on a chart-by-chart basis, this is the highest that we've seen in gas prices in roughly 8 years. And it was kind of shocking, you know, the way that it went up. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we're paying roughly, you know, $3.15. Then it goes to $3.50, mm-hmm. which doesn't sound like a lot. But when you add that up, you know, the one thing that gas prices are they're essentially de facto taxes on the citizens because we can't get around it, you know, not in mass. I should say production anyhow. You know, we do have our electronic vehicles and, you know, we have other alternative means of energy, but we're still highly dependent on crude oil and gasoline. So that's something that's needed, especially right now in the Northeast, mm-hmm. which contributes to this with the super snowstorms that they've had across the Midwest and the Northeast. There's a lot more oil gas that is being used and propane that's being used to heat homes and things of that nature. So this is typically, in that respect, a time of reduced ebb and flow and a little bit of an increase in gas prices regionally. But fundamentally, I believe this is all predicated on what we're seeing as inflation is taking place in our economy. So give me a little bit more backdrop from an investment standpoint. Typically, when we're going into inflationary periods of time, you want to move your investments into those safe havens that are, you know, more so hedges against inflation. And that's typically the commodity sector, such as real estate investment trust, crude oil, energy, things of that nature. They're typically provide you with a hedge against inflation because they typically rise with inflation. That price is going to increase, and then they're going to pay out an income to you that'll keep pace and sometimes outpace inflation itself. So we're seeing a high appetite, you know, for those people and those individuals and those investors running through commodities as well, thus also driving up crude oil prices and through that lens of speculation as well.
Okay, so I have another question because my husband keeps – he gets really annoyed with this whole thing because one of the things that he says is like, okay, just because the barrel of oil goes up right away, that doesn't mean the gas – because there's so many – there's a process from transitioning from pulling the oil out of the ground and getting it to your pump and into your car. So it's not like – you know, you're paying – why do they jump hike up the price as soon as the oil in the ground and barrel goes up?
So, and that's a very good question. And so there is typically a lag sometimes of 2 to 3 weeks from when the oil – or even longer – when the oil is brought out of the basin on the Bakken Shale and actually put into a gas station in your local area. So gas prices are typically driven region by region and priced by the different oil companies or gas companies that are running those stations. They typically set the prices for those regions ahead of what the demand is going to be. And this is what was explained to me from a representative from Citgo several years ago. Specifically, that question, if oil, crude oil shoots up during a trading day today, you know, why are gas prices high tonight? Because there's, you know, there's no way that I could be buying the gas that was traded earlier today, in the futures that was traded earlier today. But the thought process is, from their standpoint, is we want to get ahead. We're forecasting based on crude oil prices as to what the cost is going to be to get that future inventory to your location. Thus, we use what that cost is going to be to get that future inventory to your location, and we implement that within 24 hours so that we can be able to, you know, hedge and be able to, you know, get that inventory here and maintain the flow of oil easily and flow of gas easily. So it's a standpoint of essentially the oil and gas companies in our gas stations, you know, being able to hedge their bet a little bit in advance and bring in, you know, that small margin of revenue before they actually have to pay the larger cost themselves of that oil that's coming in.
So when the prices drop at the barrel right away, are they going to drop the prices at the pump right away?
That's the unfortunate thing. So I've never seen it work out in the favor of the consumer in the opposite direction. Typically, when the prices do drop, it may be a 2 to 3 day lag or even longer before we start to see some dent in those prices at the pump. So crude oil actually dipped down a little bit yesterday, and I believe it closed, it settled under $90. We're not going to immediately see that new repricing automatically. We're still going to hover right around 349, 350, you know, for the next several days, and unless crude oil, you know, tanks off and summits to a much lower level at a sustainable pace.
That's so wrong. That is.
It is. It's unfortunate that. And I agree with you in that same respect. It is. It is very, very unfortunate, and it's not fair to the consumer, in my eyes. But that's just the way they operate, and it's the way that our current legislation allows things to operate. You know, in that respect, even drilling down, even locally to each particular gas station, there are some gas stations that I go to, and I'll start pumping the gas, and it seems like 40 cents have been ran up before I can actually feel gas coming out of it. And that's another thing that's always frustrated at me as well, because like I'm losing, you know, 50 cents every time I gas up, because, you know, that well is being pumped and that suction is driving, but I'm still getting charged, but I don't feel anything coming out. And I'm sure it's supposed to be calibrated, you know, per the energy commissioner of the state of Florida. But oftentimes, you know, we're on the wrong end of that benefit as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to have to look a little bit more into this. We got to readdress this topic for sure. But we're going to take a quick break right now. I'm having coffee. Yeah. Virtually, sort of, with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back. Okay, so we are going to go ahead and keep going. Here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore. It's the first Friday of the month on G's Power Hour, and that's when the jobs report comes out. And we're talking also about, you know, other sectors of the economy as well, and how unfairly we get treated at the gas pump. We were just talking about that. But it's all over. It's food. I've noticed, too, Paul, in the retail stores that the sales have changed a lot. The things, you know, the buy one, get ones, don't see them as much. It's like buy one, get one half price instead of buy one, get one. Or it's, you know, or it's something else. It's like the sale price that you're accustomed to, and especially if you shop sales regularly, you kind of notice it's like, okay, that's not the sale that I'm accustomed to, you know. Where the sale would have been, let's say, $5 off for a clearance item, and it's like maybe $2 off for a clearance item. And so that's kind of even if you're trying to budget by shopping sales, it's really still causing a bit of a pinch.
It is. And this is all part of inflation in the system. You know, I keep going back to that I word and keep saying inflation, but it really is changing a lot of what we're seeing. We're going to get to the point soon where you may have a period with no BOGOs, you know, at some of our favorite stores such as Publix and things of that nature when it comes to groceries and also, and like you mentioned, in the retail stores. Manufacturers are having to burden more costs, especially as we're seeing rising input costs such as energy, and they're passing that down the supply chain. So that's going to go from the manufacturers to those retailers that are, you know, selling those, you know, those, and then those retailers are going to have to adjust what they're due to maintain their margins on, you know, on their balance sheets and on their income statements. And in doing so, they're going to pass that along to us in the forms of a lower amount of discounts, a lower amount of sales or BOGOs, or things of that nature. And then after that, when those exacerbate, then we may really see a true significant rise in additional prices. But right now where we are, you know, those deals that we're accustomed to, they may disappear for a while, especially in wake of supply chain issues. We haven't, you know, a lot of people, and we spoke about this last month, I believe, you know, you have a lot of individuals that have ordered stuff and it's taken 8 months to arrive, and then they cancel those orders, but that product is still going to arrive at that retailer, that store. So they'll fall into some places where they'll have some oversupply, and one way to get rid of oversupply is you got to reduce price or offer discounts and sales, but then you'll have a time frame where you know, the demand will be in the opposite direction because supply is not there to meet it. So they'll have to increase prices to pull back some of that organic demand in there. So
but you're going to have people that have, because we've had to modify our lifestyle so much, you're going to have people that will, you know, even when they just do decide to drop the price, people are going to say, well, you know, I've done it without it this long, you know, or, you know, I actually really don't need it. Found out I really didn't need it, you know, and I've, you know, altered the course and I'm doing some other things now. So, you're talking about it's going to be sitting on the shelves and stuff like that. So how does that impact the first of all, how does that impact companies? Is that going to cause some of these companies to shut down or, you know, what's the game plan for them? Especially, like, I guess if you're a smaller company, if you are a company that's been around for a while and you've seen a lot of these different scenarios with the economy, you probably learned how to adjust, although this has been very unpredictable. But what about some of the not-so-big companies?
It's going to be very difficult. It's going to put them in, you know, a very quandary of a place where they're going to have to make those decisions about their margins, and maybe actively move towards having leaner margins for periods of time. I was in a conference earlier this week where one of the companies that was there, one of the asset managers that was at the conference, spoke about, you know, how they had to, you know, they went through some lean times and they had to, you know, downshift, you know, some of their employees. And then just recently meaning the last 3 or 4 months, they were able to bring back some of those that, you know, they downshifted and survive. Now, this was a larger company, but you can imagine if it's a operation, a restaurant, or, you know, a local retailer that may only have 10 or 12 employees and their margins are so compressed that they have to pull back on a couple of those employees, unfortunately, and lay them off or, you know, downshift a little bit. That makes it very, very hard for that organization to operate. One, because the level of service that you've provided and that your customer base has gotten accustomed to is going to shift in the adverse, you know, scenario. If you have a organization that's running with 6 people instead of 10, that means that, you know, those 6 people there have to pick up, essentially split 40% of the work of what was lost. So they're going to be doing more. They're going to be more stretched, which can, you know, cause them to be more stressed. And then that service, you know, level is going to be impacted, and that's going to impact revenue. That's going to impact, you know, the income, you know, up and down, you know, the income statement. So it's a very, very hard thing to fathom, and it's a very hard thing to massage, you know, as business owners, you know, that are facing, you know, these tough times. It's hard to project the ability to be able to hire and say, hey, my demand is going to be this 6 months from now. So I want to be able to start posting jobs and get those in there. But it's hard to forecast that. And some larger organizations that are struggling with that right now, unfortunately, are hospitals, you know, when it comes to staffing for nursing and things of that nature. So we have some local hospitals here that are doing well. Some local hospital chains that are doing well, and some local hospitals within those chains that are operating very, very thin margins and with a very, very low staff and low service quality. And it's, you know, it's very possible that we could see, as a result of this, you know, some of these hospital chains need to consolidate their operations or take on more debt in order to be able to, you know, fund the bridge the gap between now and then, whenever this pandemic is over. Or we may see some M&A, mergers and acquisitions take place in that particular space to help, you know, some of those ailing, you know, hospitals within the chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've seen a little bit of all of that recently with the hospital. There was one that there was an acquisition recently by Advent Health. And also one of the things, speaking of Advent Health, not just singling them out for any particular reason, but it's just that I came across something, I don't know, I had a card, but I came across something that they had. I was going to get my birthday smoothie, and they had this little display with these cards that kind of, and it was kind of helpful, but it was just interesting to show you where you should go. Not specifically in terms of which hospital, but where, what kind of places you should go for what particular ailment, like whether you go to a CentraCare or some sort of smaller place versus going to a bigger hospital. And so, I was like, oh, that's cool. So, I got two because I got one I was going to keep here at the house. But I got one to put in my car because, if you're in an accident or something like that, and depending on your injuries or whatever, you could say, well, okay, maybe I won't go to a regular hospital. Maybe I end up going to like a CentraCare or something like that. But it was interesting. I have to send that to you, and I'll have to probably maybe scan it and post it so that people could see, what you're being told by your medical community in terms of how to address your different ailments and injuries. So,
yeah, that's very interesting, and I agree with that too. And sometimes from an insurance standpoint, you come out much better if you can go to an urgent care clinic as opposed to a hospital, especially during these times where our hospitals are flooded with a lot of COVID patients, and not just COVID patients, but you still have, like car accidents. Just because COVID arrived doesn't mean that we no longer have diagnoses of cancer and heart attacks and strokes and things of that nature. So
right,
the normal ebbs and flows of the hospitals are still there, and then COVID is a really heavy straw on that camel's back.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So we're going to take a quick break. We are here with Paul V. Shelton. We're going to talk about a couple of things when we come back. One is making some changes possibly with your decision for Valentine's Day gifts. So we're going to talk about that. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back. Does it appear the long arm of the law is working against you instead of for you? Whom do you call when the boys in blue are pursuing you? When the wrong person behind bars may end up being you? With over 40 years combined legal expertise, Anderson & Welch bring to bear a smart, sound, sensible defense of those caught in what may be the unrelenting grip of the legal system. Turn to Anderson & Welch first to get ahead of trouble, not fall into it, by calling 561-832-3386. That's 561-832-3386. That's Anderson & Welch Law Firm online at andersonandwelch.com. Hey, welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are talking the economy with Paul V. Shelton of Warwickshire. And not taking calls today because this is pre-recorded because I'm goofing off. But anyway, I'm enjoying my coffee this morning with Paul. And so one of the things, of course, that's coming up that I want to talk about, well, I guess we can talk about a few things. But Valentine's Day, got about a week or so to get those gifts. And they're already talking about shortages in flowers, one of the big staples of the day. One of the things that I thought about was, maybe this is a good time to support local growers. But also I was talking to you earlier this week about, maybe let's look at some financial opportunities as possible gifts. Can you go into that a little bit?
Definitely, and I love the idea of having that as a potential gift and an alternative to what we typically know as the gift of love. I mean, so often, like you mentioned, the flowers are given, hearts, you know, candy and things of that nature are given. But we oftentimes shy away from those financial gifts, which was part of our society, you know, a generation or two generations ago. You know, I remember many grandparents, you know, being able to say, I'm going to buy a savings bond, you know, for this grandchild, or purchase this, or even, you know, have an annuity or insurance, or things of that nature. And we've shifted away from that. I kind of call it the microwave shift. We want instant gratification with our money today as opposed to investing it. And hopefully we can change that narrative, because investing is very important, and it's not costly to do. You don't have to have a lot of money to start investing, especially, you know, investing in the capital markets. Many brokerage, you know, accounts are open for free, whether it's TD Ameritrade, Charles Schwab, Fidelity, all those places, Interactive Brokers. You can open up an account for free and fund it with $25, $50, $100, $1,000, whatever the case may be. And I think that that is a great gift that you can give someone, being able to, you know, start them out with investing. And not only to start them out with investing, but think about, you know, those products that they use, you know, potentially on a daily basis, such as, you know, Starbucks. Instead of buying that Starbucks card or gift card for $50 or so, maybe buy them a couple of Starbucks stops in addition to that, since they really like that product, and let them be able to benefit from the growth of Starbucks while they benefit from, you know, the taste of their favorite coffees. So I think the greatest gift that you can give, and those are gifts that are going to pay dividends over and over again and literally pay dividends, are, you know, the gift of investing. And that's something that I want all of us to consider this year during this Valentine's, you know, season, and also, you know, during, you know, birthdays, anniversaries, holidays, and things of that nature. And it doesn't have to be just a gift to, you know, laterally to your spouse, but also, you know, I think it's a great thing to be able to gift that to your kids and really spearhead, you know, that financial literacy journey for them at a young age.
Yeah, because one thing you've got to remember, if you've got kids, they're the ones that are going to be taking care of you possibly later
Correct.
On as you get up in years. And so you got to make sure that they are on solid foundation and can make sound financial decisions when it comes time for them to take care of you.
So. Yep, that is very, very true. And you want them to not have to lean on you. And we understand life happens, but the best we can do to set up our kids to be financially independent helps them out in so many ways as they move forward in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, you know, they can have that independence and turn around and take care of us. You know, hopefully that will be the case. Hopefully my four kids, one of them will be able to help me out in my old and ailing age when I get there. But that financial independence is a great gift to give someone.
Right. You know, you're talking about giving to a loved one. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a romantic loved one or whatever, but the thing about it is if you give it and you're able to, you know, grow the money, it's a gift, like they say, that keeps on giving. It's one of those things that, and you may need it for yourself if you retire or something happens, or you may need it to benefit someone else that you love. So we don't always equate, you know, a financial gift with something that's, let's say, romantic or whatever, or shows love. But at the same time, you are showing love in a different way, just making sure that they're secure, because part of loving someone is, you know, securing their happiness and well-being. And so this is one way to go about doing that.
And to that point, if I may add too,
yes,
we're often taught that the, you know, where a man's finances are, his heart is, and where you find his finances, you find his investments, that's where you find his heart. And that love that you would get from someone, and that gratification that you will get If you were thinking about it, you know, 30 years from now, if you start investing from your kids, and, you know, when your kids come to you and they're, you know, in their 30s or 40s, and how does that gratification, you know, recycle itself and come back to mom and dad when those kids can say, thank you, mom and dad, for making me a millionaire with investing a small amount for me today and getting me on that road, you know, to the right direction, you know, because that's very, very possible to do with, you know, over, you know, that period of time.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, just remember, too, the thing is, don't just throw the money at the person, okay?
Yeah.
Just take some time to also invest in them in terms of teaching them what they're supposed to do with it. Don't just tell them, okay, go put it in a bank account or go, you know. You got to kind of do some explaining sometimes for some people, you know. So just don't throw the money at them, you know, that I'm doing this because I love you. It's like, no, this is the way this works. This is the way this is going to work, or this is the way it's supposed to work. And give some lessons, and you just may have to, you know, revisit those lessons every now and then to make sure that they stick, you know. But that's just one suggestion where, I mean, if you're having a hard time, you know, you can't get the flowers that you want. You can't get the candy that you want. You can't get into the restaurant that you want to go to because you waited too late to make the reservation, or they just don't have the staff to serve you. Just think about that, too. There's all these components that are different this time around, you know. So, I mean, I've been going, not necessarily I went to a nice little restaurant. My cousins took me out for my a birthday dinner, and we went to this nice small restaurant in Lake County in Claremont, and you know, there are people there, and we were able to sit outdoors, you know, nice socially distanced, and the weather wasn't too bad. The thing about it is, though, it was nice to be able to sit out and you know, gather with family a little bit, and we were all safe. We had our masks and everything. But that's one of the things that you've got to think about, too, is, you know, that particular night, Valentine's Day night, you may not be able to get into these restaurants, or you might want to, let's say, order in advance and take it home, you know. But even if you do that, do they have enough staff? And do they have enough food to cook, you know, they're planning now, but they may not have enough, you know, for whatever the demand is. And so you might have to change your plan. So this is a good time to kind of think about alternative gifts, you know, and that's why we wanted to bring this up, alternative gifts, alternative ways to celebrate. And I'm trying to present these alternative ways to celebrate because I'm these people that hate Valentine's Day out there. I'm not letting you get off that easy. There are other ways to show somebody that you love them, and don't, you know, so those people that are saying this is an artificial holiday, it's not an artificial holiday. It's a way to show love, and there's various ways to show love, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to talk about this one aspect this morning. So anyway, we are going to take our final break. We also want to talk a little, I guess, Black history, too. This is G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good. Entertainment. I'm here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwick Shore, and we will be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407 407- 578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwickshire. And so let me ask you this before we go forward. So the stocks, bonds, whatever, you put it into like a greeting card and you say Happy Valentine's Day? Is that what you do?
There's great ideas that you can come up with online. You can actually print out, if you just go to Google, you can print out in images a bunch of different generic stock certificates, and you can just write in or type in, you know, what the stock is and how many you've gifted to that person, kind of like a gift card, you know, and just for the formality of it. And that's a great thing to do, especially with kids. Sometimes you don't necessarily want to share the dollar amount or what the account may be for that child, but you can, you know, because they may not have the maturity yet to understand when they're on a playground with their friends and, you know, talking about different things. You don't want them just to talk money or, you know, there's many different reasons. So printing out those certificates and saying, hey, today you got more certificates, you got more stock. They can see that, and that's something tangible where it doesn't give them the dollar amount, but it tells them, oh, okay, I got, you know, this certificate has 10 more stocks on it. And it's not the actual share certificate that you would get from the company or anything of that nature, because everything's mostly electronic nowadays, but it's a visualization for them.
And, right.
You know, that's something that's awesome. And you know, even for those loved ones, our spouses and things, it can be, hey, this stock certificate, you know, that I purchased for you, you know, now this is the login. Look at your account, and this is what's available for you.
So let's shift gears a little bit while we got some time left and talk about Black history and the economy. And can you, do you have any information that you could share with us?
Well, I do, and you know, I love history. I really do love history. And two things that I want to, you know, kind of highlight, I should say not two things, but two individuals, is has to do in the financial industry. And one of them is Maggie Walker, or Maggie Lena Walker, which a lot of people may know her as. But she was a African-American woman that lived in Richmond, Virginia, born in 1864 during the time of the Civil War. And she was the first African-American businesswoman and teacher to launch a bank, which is amazing. And, you know, not only did she, you know, was she a businesswoman at the turn of the century, which wasn't often, you know, accepted for women to operate in business, but she also, through her bank and through some of her other companies, she also had white men as clients that supported her bank, which is a true trailblazer to me, for her to be able to do so. And in that day and time, you know, that, you know, this country was living in, coming out of the Civil War, and having the courage, you know, not only just to conduct business, but, you know, being able to go out and have clients that didn't just look like her. But she did a great job of supporting the African-American community and providing banking services and education for those small African-American companies and farmers and things that were in that area. And I really consider her, you know, one of those major, major trailblazers that you really don't hear a lot about when it comes to, you know, African-American history. So I think that she is, you know, really a great, pillar of, you know, just, you know, Black wealth and financial wealth in our society.
Okay.
So, yeah. So the other person that I would mention is, you know, a man, the first Black man to open a bank was Jesse Binga. And he was a very prominent man from Chicago. And he was, you know, did, you know, very similar to Maggie Lena Walker. He was the first black man to charter a bank. And, you know, and I look at both of them, especially in their time and season, and he was born and lived a little bit longer than Maggie Walker did. But he was born in a year after her, in 1865. But thinking of the time in which he was born and the temperature and the tenor of this country at this time, for him to be able to go out there and be able to launch a business and launch a bank and be able to have that bank grow and thrive is a remarkable achievement. So when I think about some of the things as an entrepreneur that I want to do, I kind of lean on the shoulders of these two individuals and garner so much respect, so much joy, and so much strength just from these two individuals and specific to my industry.
I want to ask what you have seen and observed in terms of what I would say is the decline of black business centers. You know, we've gotten to, you know, I think because of desegregation, you know, we've tended to kind of go outside of our communities for different goods and services. And it's a little difficult to try to say, okay, hey, stay in your community. But isn't it, I mean, wouldn't it help to build up our, you know, entrepreneurs, our community, economic communities in the African-American communities by being able to stay in those communities and support those goods and services there?
Correct. Correct, and that's, you know, what this mission is that we're pursuing with the credit union that we recently chartered and some other things that we have, that I have personally on the pipeline. And essentially what it comes down to is access. The access has not been there historically, you know, for people that look like me and that want to launch their own business, whether it's in finance or whether it's in a any other services industry or manufacturing, whatever the case may be, the access just hasn't been there, and it hasn't had that corporate support to drive that. And that's what drives overall wealth and, you know, and lessens that wealth gap, reduces that wealth gap over time. So hopefully there's a narrative that we've seen change, unfortunately, as a result of George Floyd. A lot of companies have, you know, awakened and said we need to change it, but the implementation of what they're doing is still lagging. There's really nothing even measurable out there in reference to that. And I'm actually going to be in Fort Lauderdale later this month speaking in a conference on this particular topic here, and how we can write the narrative and generate, you know, the equality when it comes to wealth and reduce that wealth gap. Because the one thing that was, the one statistic that came out earlier this week was that during the pandemic, every nationality except for African Americans saw an increase in wealth. Mm-hmm. And this is at a time where real estate market is soaring. This is at a time where the stock market was at all-time highs. So you have white, you have Hispanic, Asians. They all saw an increase in their wealth. But mm-hmm. African Americans saw a 14% decrease in aggregate in our overall wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that is scary. And what's scary on top of that is, you know, during these times where, you know, finances are doing really well, we are seeing a decrease in wealth. One, because we haven't had access to the home ownership that we need to in our communities. And we haven't had access to own assets such as, you know, stocks and things of that nature historically, which is becoming easier now because, you know, historically we had to go to a bank, sit down with a banker and open an account. Now you can go online and in 3 minutes you can open up a brokerage account and be able to trade, and it's much mm-hmm. easier. You don't have the intimidation of going into the bank where someone doesn't look like you and have that fear factor and that intimidation factor that you don't have enough to be able to participate. So there are some things that have changed that have made it better, but at the same time, we need more access. We need more black ownership. We need more black banks out there
But I think also, Paul, part of the problem is, like I was talking earlier about, you give somebody money, you give somebody stocks and bonds, and they say thank you, and they're just like, kind of like, okay, what do I do with this? I think there needs to be a lot more financial education.
Correct.
To occur in African-American communities so that the light bulb goes off. It's like, oh, okay, I get it. And also just to teach some patients, you know, like you're talking about the immediate gratification. It's like, okay, some stuff is going to happen now. Some stuff is going to happen way down the road. And you've got to, you know, be patient and wait it out and work on it. You know, the accumulation, and we talk about, like, real estate, for example. One of the things that you know, I see as a realtor, you have a lot of people that will say, no, I don't want nothing to fix up. I don't want nothing I got to spend a lot of time on. You know, I want to just get in and move in, and that's it. Well, that's great if you can do it. You know, but it may not be the thing that you do right now. You know, the property that you buy right now may not be the property that you're in 20, 30, 50 years down the road. You know, it may be the property that you use and you use, you know, because it's an investment, and so you're going to use it to get to the next step or steps. You know, and so it may be a really pitiful property that you buy, that you purchase, and you may live in it, or you get, let's say, a duplex. We did this for a while, lived in one side, rented out the other. You know, you get it, and then at one point, you get to a point where, okay, I don't need to live in the other side of the duplex. I don't need to share a wall with someone. I can, you know, keep my duplex, rent out the size I was living in, and buy a home of my own. You know, and but you have to build and you have to take steps. And I think people have to, number one, gain more knowledge, be more strategic. You know, and I think that's the thing, is you can't necessarily act on impulse. A lot of things have to have a strategy that come along with it. So you have to be more educated, you have to be more strategic, and you have to be more patient, I think, in order to accumulate the type of wealth and grow the type of income that you want.
I agree. And the most important thing you said in there too was education. You have to have that literacy to be able to navigate through. And so I agree with you 100%.
Okay. So Paul, you are one of those people that are helping to try to, you know, grow our community financially. How can people get in contact with you?
You can reach me and the firm at Warwick Shore, that's WARWICKSHORE.com, and on Instagram, on Facebook, on all social media at Warwick Shore Advisors. And you know, we'll love to work with you and hear from you. We specialize in providing financial planning and investment management, you know, and includes insurance as well in there. So you can reach us at 407-493-6288.
All right. And we're going to continue this theme of getting, you know, a little bit more financial wealth, because we're going to talk on Monday with Jabir Najir of Rise on Mortgage, because it's Mortgage Monday. We usually kind of book in our week, you know, the first week of the month, but actually the first Friday and the first Monday fall in two separate weeks. So it allows us to continue the theme. So, you know, join us then. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate your insight. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too. Have a great weekend. Bye.
Thank you. And thank you all for joining us. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had So Good Entertainment. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
He'll make it all right.